Captain, we have them. We've established Transporter Lock, the Star Trek podcast. Join Ken and Sabriel each week as they explore strange new episodes, seek out new plots and new characters, and boldly go where no podcast has gone before.
And welcome to Transporter Lock. I'm Captain Sabriel Mastin, and as usual, I'm joined by Chief Engineer Ken Gagne. How's it going, Mr. Gagne?
Oh, Captain Sabriel, it is going delightful. It is October, it's Q4, and we have 6 new missions on our duty roster to cover today.
Q4, we've already gone through Q1 and Q2.
Oh, don't talk about Q, we haven't met them yet. We're on a Trelane thing right now.
Yeah. We're here to talk a lot about Lower Decks and some other Star Trek stuff. It's been a few weeks, but life is busy. We are short. No, life is short and we are busy.
And also, we've had some very short treks.
Yes. We have 3 episodes of very short treks since we began, and I remember those first two were something else.
They were. These very short treks. Well, what do you think of this concept overall? We've now seen 5 of them, I believe.
All 5. We're done with them. They're done.
Oh, that's it? That's all of them?
This is it.
Oh.
That's why this episode, this most recent one, was such a big to do. I had a blast with them. I loved all of them, first 3 and second viewings better. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with them. We're actually talking about the last 3 here in a second, but how about you?
Since they are so short, I watched each one at least 3 times. Uh-huh. With one exception.
No.
Yeah,
no.
That one. Yeah. But like, I never watched Discovery or Strange New Worlds or Picard more than once. I know you do, which is awesome because you pick up things that I miss because I only watch it once. But very short treks, yeah, I can just over and over. Like every time I have somebody over, like every time I send the link to somebody, I watch it again, too, just to remind myself what they're about to see. The exception was the very first short trek we're going to be discussing today, which was the 3rd of 5, and that is Worst Contact. So sometimes I engage in hyperbole for comedic effect, and I want you to know that that is not what I'm doing right now. I am being sincere for one of the few times in my life when I say that Worst Contact is the worst thing Star Trek has ever done. Like, worse than Janeway and Paris becoming lizards, worse than Crusher having sex with an Irish ghost. Worst Contact was the worst. And maybe that is what they were going for, but I will never watch that again, and I wish I never had.
The entire time Ken was watching it, he's just going, No.
It was not funny. It was not funny at all. And that is the goal of these very short treks. And this one was not.
Was that not? Is that the goal?
I think so. This one was not. It failed miserably. It was appalling. I don't know if you're laughing at the episode or
if you were not aware. Worst Contact to go down to visit some aliens and quickly discover who just discovered warp drive, warp capabilities, Riker, Crusher, and unnamed ends to go down. And they soon find out that these people revere the booger and snot, basically. A little bit more, but that's basically it. And you see, like, their whole room is surrounded, it looks like green paint, just a cool little 60s thing. You soon find out, no, the entire room is just covered with booger and snot. And as soon as Riker starts beginning to catch on what's going on here, that's why I keep repeating the phrase, no. Just and the Crusher and Riker end up just destroying the warp device that they built. And like, oh, we'll call you. We'll come. Oh, we got to go since it didn't work. I found it first viewing. I went, what the is going on? And then second viewing, I was laughing my butt off.
I will never know if it gets better upon repeated viewings because I will never have that experience. This is not a video podcast, but you and I can see each other, Sabriel. And if our audience could, they could see me just grimacing and sneering the whole time you were describing it. I'm really glad they got Gates McFadden. I mean, I know it's not unusual for her to be doing Star Trek since she starred in the 3rd season of Picard. But anytime they bring back previous actors, I love it. So, except
speaking
of
previous actors, let's just jump to the next one. Holograms all the way down.
This one, oh my gosh, this was a landmark because I can't think of any other Star Trek production that featured actors from every single series.
Nope.
This had it. This did it. It had Voyager and Enterprise and Deep Space Nine and Next Generation and Discovery and Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks and the original series.
And Prodigy.
And Prodigy, that's right.
This was a lot of fun. Like, they opened up totally making fun of the final episode of Enterprise and the theme song.
Referencing it, but definitely making fun of it because the Enterprise is exploding and Riker's like, this is just what I needed to relax.
Yep, making fun of it. It was great. I loved it. Mm-hmm. We just jump all the way down to what was next. Get Quark and Garak. Sadly, we didn't get...
Andrew J. Robinson's voice.
Voicing. We had Armin Shimerman there. And then we jumped to Tendi. I don't need to hold it all, but that was just so much fun of just the literally holograms all the way down until we get to
Neelix.
Neelix, Ethan Phillips.
Yep.
We got Hammer even again, but before that, but Ethan
and
Phillips.
Saru.
And Bonnie.
And Sulu. But yes, Bonnie Gordon, former guest of this show, Transporter Lock, did the voice of the computer.
But what I was getting to is we got Ethan Phillips on there. And Ethan Phillips was recently Delta Flyers because of the actor strike and writer strike have been not talking about Star Trek. They did just finish all 7 seasons and they were going to switch to a new format. But they've been getting actors on to talk about themselves.
Mm. Yep, just like at Dragon Con.
Ethan Phillips was there and like, everything about that episode made me realize how underutilized Ethan Phillips was in Voyager and how much they squandered Neelix. Ethan Phillips is a brilliant man and brilliant actor from what they're talking about and all the things and what he tried and wanted to do with Neelix. Just was unable to because 90s Star Trek was stuck in its ways. I wish he could have gotten the opportunity. But so then hearing him talking on that show and then hearing him actually get a small little part here made me so happy. This obviously didn't expand the Neelix character at all, but just make that connection of hearing him talk there and then seeing him get to reprise his role even for like 6 words was just, it made me happy.
I need to go listen to Delta Flyers.
Yeah, it's so good. Awesome. They're getting everybody. They're getting like Martha Hackett played Seska. They've got Roxanne Dawson talking about things, Ethan Phillips, and they're getting all these actors to talk about themselves that is not Star Trek related, or they'll skirt around it while they wait for things to go around. But really good show.
That's awesome. I will include a link to that episode in the show notes for this episode.
Yeah. Anything you want to add about holograms all the way down?
There are 2 parts that I felt were weak that could have been better. One was the appearance of the Star Trek Prodigy characters. They were clearly not animated. They were just cutouts that were being moved. And I understand that it's a very different animation style from the rest of the animated series, which they're trying to call back to here. But it just felt like it's almost like when you see somebody using stock art that still has the watermark on it. And I was like, did you guys actually get the rights to use Prodigy, or are you just copy and pasting?
See, that didn't occur to me at all. To me, it was just like, it takes a lot to render things in 3D when you got 2D here is so much easier. And who knows how long they actually had to make these episodes. That was my thought.
But that's part of the fun for me, is that there were so many different animation styles being like, you saw the Lower Decks animation style right next to the anime series style. And I don't know, I would have liked to have seen Prodigy style as well. The other weak part was at the very end when you have like a 5-headed character. Like, everything else up until that point was very Inception-like, and you could almost make yourself ask what is real and what is not. But then you get to that, and you're like, what is going on?
That was the point.
it just felt a little too weird to me.
Just went off the deep end for you.
Yeah, like, everything else actually was not off the deep end, no matter how silly it got. But then that was just out of the blue. I don't really feel like they built up to it. And also, Discovery, Saru saying computer freeze program. They didn't have holodecks on Discovery, although I guess once they fast forward to the future, they do. And also, I learned, as we'll get to in a moment, the animated series introduced the concept of the holodeck.
Yeah.
I see. I've only ever seen one or two episodes of the animated series, even though I have the whole series on Blu-ray. So I did not know that they had that technology back then.
Yeah. Star Trek Continues also played with that idea a little bit. Scotty plays it on the holodeck. They have a holodeck episode in Star Trek Continues, which I recommend too. Go to Wild West. Fun. Cool. Where Scotty's son,
Chris Doohan.
Chris Doohan's son gets to play his dad.
No, James Doohan's son. This series. Chris.
Uh-huh. James Doohan's son plays Scotty. Whatever his name is. The guy, the actor who played Scotty in Star Trek, the original series in 1967 and whatever, he got to play his dad.
Yes.
His character. And they had a holodeck episode there too. At least a little bit of a holodeck episode.
Which leads me into the next very short trek, Walk, Don't Run. I was disappointed that they didn't get Chris Doohan to play Scotty here.
Because I didn't think about it. I wasn't disappointed or excited either way.
I mean, they have all these other actors coming back and reprising their roles. Like even in this one, they had George Takei and Jonathan Frakes, which I thought was awesome. And then they, obviously they're not going to have Majel Barrett, but they have a precedent for somebody playing Scotty. They have a couple of somebodies. They have the person they just introduced on Strange New Worlds, and they have Chris Doohan, who I know was not canon, but I don't know. I just would have liked to have seen somebody who has played Scotty before play Scotty again.
We have a whole bunch of Scotties. Didn't bug me at all. But this line is...
I mean, it didn't disrupt my enjoyment, but it's something I would have liked to have seen.
I laugh so hard at the "I've got your orgy right here." Just starts taking off his belt.
So remind
and totally me. Ripping into Lower Decks. It was great.
Was that a holodeck from the first season?
Is no, he was talking about just the anime, the show.
Yeah, no, I'm saying when they talked about, like, because Tenny was talking about all the things they've used the holodeck for, and then Scotty says, yeah, and you had an orgy. I was trying to remember, I know that happened. I remember the first season of Lower Decks, there was a big brouhaha about how they were actually using black censor bars on animated series. Was that the holodeck? No. I honestly don't remember.
No.
That orgy actually happened?
Yeah. They even reference vaguely in the most recent episode we're going to talk about, where the Cerritos is statistically the horniest ship in the fleet.
Yes, but I
guess I don't know for sure. I guess.
Oh, I'm checking now. I just Googled it. Season 2, Episode 1. Ensign Mariner walks in on an orgy involving most of the crew of the Cerritos. The whole event was a hologram, but upset whole swaths of the fandom. Okay. And then it says, it goes right on to say, Star Trek is one of the horniest franchises in existence. Doesn't say Lower Decks. It says Star Trek, which if you take into account Riker and Kirk, yeah, I can see that. Okay. But yeah, also, Tendi's a good singer.
Yeah, it's really good. Just get to let it out. That was awesome.
I want to hear more of that. And somebody else told me that all the characters just suddenly grabbing instruments and bursting out into song was a very 70s cartoon thing to do.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you got the reference too. Oh, that's fun that you didn't. Oh, you get to explore. You learn so much. That's awesome.
Did that happen on the animated series or just in cartoons in general?
No, cartoons in general. Even like the Brady Bunch cartoon, referencing that, and Josie the Pussycat, Scooby-Doo. Yeah.
Oh, see, of those three, I know that they all exist. This is not a surprise to me, but I've only ever seen Scooby-Doo of those three.
So yeah, it would happen. It would happen. Just the thing you did, your cartoons would just start singing.
I want the single for that song. I loved it. It was very trippy. I liked it. So that is the end of Very Short Treks?
Yep, that's it.
All right. Well, we are 15 minutes into this podcast episode. That leaves us like 45 minutes or so to discuss the latest three episodes of Lower Decks, which was In Order, Something Borrowed, Something Green, and Pathological Fallacies, and Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
Mm-hmm. So, let's get to it.
Yeah, Something Borrowed, Something Green.
I had so much fun with this episode and finally getting to explore Orion's. And I love the names of these Orions. Bert and Erica.
I thought that was pretty great too. I was chuckling at that.
I had so much fun. I always loved Tendi's little like denying of Orion culture and hiding from it a little bit. And this is like the first time we've really explored Orion culture in Star Trek and actually gone to Orion.
Yes.
Or at least gone to and explored it more. Maybe we went there once or twice on Lower Decks or whatever it was. That's not really relevant. But we actually get to explore the society a bit here. And that's what was fun.
That's one of the things I love about the animated series, both Lower Decks and back in the 70s, was that they were able to feature places and races and species that they never did before because of budget and special effects. So I don't know that we ever would have gotten to see Orion on a live action show, but it's just as easy to go to Orion as anywhere else when it's Lower Decks.
And here we can show that Tendi's family is very rich. We can have weird bug game here, like drinking game, like deadly bug drinking game. You can have characters do stupid things like secret labs and bars underground where you got all the dudes are hyped up on the moans.
Yep.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Let me ask you, though. Do you think Tendi is, I'm not sure which phrase is the correct one, a manic pixie dream girl?
I think they kind of lean into that. I don't think she actually is one, but they totally lean into that trope here. Like, she doesn't feel like one. She's not mystically solving everyone's issues. She's not, like the object of one person's affection that completely fixes this person. We'll get to the Rutherford thing in a bit, but like, she is not Rutherford's like dream person who fixes the world for him.
You know, now that you're describing it, I agree. Manic pixie dream girls, you're right, exist for the benefit of the male character, and that's totally not her. She is her own person, especially as this episode conveyed. And that's why I was kind of torn by what term to use, because the other term I was contemplating was a Mary Sue, because it seems like she can fix almost anything. She is an amazing fighter who just busts out pirate skills when she needs them. And that is part of her backstory. It's part of the culture that she was raised in. So there's a reason for it. But I've never really seen Tendi fail at anything.
I mean, you can probably describe just about any character in Star Trek as, I mean, everyone seems to be able to do everything. Like, oh, I just re-linked the Bessard collectors over to the phase inducer on the thing. And that's how we got, we can make margaritas. I mean.
The only person I can think of who cannot be described that way, unless he's under the influence of an alien intelligence, is Barkley.
Yeah. It's like, to some degree, everyone's a Mary Sue or whatever.
But didn't that term originate in Star Trek?
I don't recall anymore.
I thought it was. I remember reading the annual anthology of Star Trek. I think it was called, Star Trek Strange New Worlds? It was a fan competition where they would accept submissions. They select the best 10.
Yes, it was Mary Sue was coined in 1973 by Paula Smith, who wrote a parody entitled A Trekkie's Tale in her zine Menagerie.
Yep, I have that Wikipedia page pulled up as well. So it did come from Star Trek.
Tangentially.
Hmm.
But I mean, I don't think of her as that. Like, every character can do whatever the plot needs.
They have plot armor.
That's Star Trek for you. That's a lot of these shows.
Yeah. And by the way, this is something I have not thought of once in the whole time we've been watching Captain Pike on television. I was right. The annual anthology I used to buy every year, because it was published from 98 to 2007, 10 editions, was called Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Nice.
And that's fascinating. That they, I mean, it's not surprising that they would reuse that for a TV show, because it's right in the opening lyrics. But, huh. Yeah, there was one edition of it I never read. They took 10 years off, then they came with a new version, and it was ebook only. And at that point in my life, I was not reading ebooks, but these were some good stories and very memorable. I highly recommend them, even if they're not canon.
I realize I really should have answered your manic pixie dream girl question another way. Well, I do declare that I think you are wrong, that she is a manic pixie dream girl.
You are a braver co-host than I am, because I am not going to try the Mark Twain accent that Boimler and Rutherford did in this episode.
Why, but this is a great way to solve disputes. I don't know what you are talking about.
How many of our listeners are being offended? How many of our listeners are Mark Twain?
I can't believe they got Captain Mariner to do the captain to do that as well. And like, you know, our aliens like, I was speaking in a southern accent.
I'm from the southern region. That was southern. Oh, that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. I thought it was very silly. It, of course, two roommates are going to get on each other's nerves eventually. I didn't think it would be about a bonsai tree, but
it was ridiculous and so much fun at the same time.
Yeah, and at no point in that plot did they say like, oh, now we have to go find Data's head, or this is a time zero pun or whatever. It's just like, it's just there. And if you know, you know. And anybody who hasn't seen Time Zero is going to be like, why are they dressing up as Samuel Clemens?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Also, Orion Gale's fighting with swords was hot. Just putting that in there.
This is the episode, not that I disagree, that really made me appreciate the addition of Talyn to the cast.
Talyn is so much fun.
I mean, I never watched the first three seasons thinking they really need a Vulcan because every show has a Vulcan. I wasn't thinking like they needed a straight person. And I mean that not in the sexual orientation version. But yeah, Talyn was just great. And
beware the hunks.
Did she say that?
Whatever it was watch out for the hunks or something like that.
Oh, I don't remember. But I liked it also at the end when she kind of gave a little fib and said, oh no, my data pad seems to be broken. And she just threw it out the window.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I like her. And yeah, I liked seeing all the characters get to get out of uniform for a bit. Uh-huh. That was unusual.
Even seeing Talyn dress up was great.
Yes.
And Talyn got into character. And
yep, they all did. That was fun.
The ship they made kind of work for a bit was the same kind that was used in The Raven, the Seven of Nine.
Oh.
And parents went to Delta Quadrant. This little fun fact for you.
So not a Starfleet ship, but a Federation ship, right?
I don't know that answer.
Because I don't think Seven's parents, I don't think the Hansons were Starfleet officers. I think
they were not under a mission. They were on their own.
Yeah, I think they were just like, they were Borg aficionados.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Weird.
Yeah, Borg weebs.
Was there an episode of Voyager when Seven of Nine was confronted by her mother as a Borg drone?
I don't think so. She just saw her dad. I was just thinking that too.
Okay, I was close. So I wasn't entirely hallucinating like ChatGPT does. Okay, cool. That's all I got to say about this episode.
Yeah, Tandy's awesome. I love Tandy so much. Here's a line from Mariner and Talyn. Talyn saying, he is aesthetically pleasing. That's what is hot. As close as she got to saying someone's hot.
Yeah, I like that Vulcans clearly have emotions. They just have different ways of acknowledging them.
Right, and we said, I mean, this is a known quantity in Star Trek.
Oh, yeah,
and
I'm
not
surprised.
It's fun to see her version of it come out.
Exactly. Every Vulcan manifests their emotions differently. And, you know, Spock, he punches bulkheads. And Talyn acknowledges that certain men are aesthetically pleasing. And in some ways, Voyager had both Tuvok and Seven of Nine doing the same thing. Like, when the Doctor tried to get Seven of Nine interested in singing, she said, music does have some interesting mathematical properties. You know, which is a very Vulcan thing to say.
Oh, in this episode, before we switch off, the strange silver ship destroyed an Orion ship in this episode.
Yes, it keeps showing up. It is strange to me.
We're doing the Jack Crusher thing of not actually answering, which, you know what, part of that leads me to think it might not matter at all. I know, like, they're putting it in there like it's something that's important, and they keep mentioning it, but part of me is starting to wonder, maybe it's superfluous. Maybe it will have it probably will have a resolution, but it might not matter. Or go, oh, okay. And we'll figure that out soon.
I suspect the ship is not destroying the people that we're seeing it destroy.
Yeah, it does seem kind of like that way, doesn't it?
Well, I have two reasons for that. One is it just seems like gratuitous violence to be destroying all these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like these are characters that they went out of their way to introduce in some previous episodes. These are not entirely strangers to us. And secondly, it just seems like it would be a better plot to have them all show up at the end as opposed to here's a ship going around killing people. Like,
yeah.
Where do you go with that?
Yeah. Also, they weren't even going after the Orion ship. The Orion ship went after it.
Yes.
True. Someone pointed out that they noticed, like, and maybe it's a red herring, that each ship that ends up being destroyed and that has a lower decker who is plotting against their captain or upset at their captain.
I noticed that at first they all had lower deckers that we had seen before. I didn't realize that there were plots. That's interesting.
Like each one has, or is some way antagonistic to the captain. Maybe not necessarily against them, but antagonistic against them for whatever 7 seconds we see of their existence.
Hmm.
So
that is a good
It could
point.
Be a red herring.
Could be. Or in Tendi's case, a green one.
A green one.
Shall we talk about empathological fallacies?
Empathological fallacies.
You told me before we started recording that you were underwhelmed by this episode. I'd like to hear you go into why.
Nothing got me excited about this episode. We didn't really... God, I'm even trying to remember what happened here. Let's see, the Betazoids come up here.
Yeah, the three women, yeah. Just like okay. In Hocus Pocus.
We learned Cations used to hunt them, okay. We're going to Borg territory for some reason because we're not thinking straight.
No. It was neutral, the neutral zone.
Neutral zone, that's right. That was a different one, the Borg one. I mean, that was the funniest part was the Romulans at the end going, oh, when the ship didn't cross into it. Nothing about this got me excited. I was bored. I'm not bored. I was just, it was a 3 out of 5 at best for me. When usually lower decks tends to be, I hate doing 3 out of 5 being average. It was a 2 out of 5.
Most below episodes average.
Are 3 or higher. Because 3 would be average, right?
It would be, yes.
I try not to do the 7 out of 10 out of everything for everything. I try to actually mean 3 out of 5 actually being average.
Brief aside, and this may be apocryphal, but I don't think it is. When the Escapist magazine relaunched a few years ago, under the leadership of a friend of ours, he was of the same opinion that 5 should be average. And this was around the time that like the Tomb Raider reboot happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he gave it like a 6 because it was above average. But that's not how Metacritic aggregates the scores. And so like there are a lot of headlines like Escapist gave Tomb Raider a 6 out of 10 and it brought the Metacritic score down and the publisher was not happy. And the publisher of the game, I mean, and the publisher of the review was just like, well, this is how we do math. 5 is average because mathematically it is. And yeah, so my point being that in the small, isolated silo and vacuum in which we are doing this podcast, we can do whatever we want. But when you are putting stuff out there into the world and there's so much momentum behind a certain grading standard, unfortunately, it's really hard to buck that system. And you sort of have to fall in line because it's what everybody else is doing.
Come at me, Paramount.
Do it. Do it.
Okay. T'Ana has Bendai syndrome. She's very young for a Vulcan.
Yeah, and
okay.
My objection to that was, okay, I really liked when Mariner said, Spock's dad had it, and he's Vulcan as F. And she's like,
that was one line.
By the transitive property, I too must be Vulcan as F. So I liked that, but
that was fun.
When Sarek had Bendy syndrome, that's the name of it, right?
Bendy, either way, whatever. You got it.
Bendy syndrome. Now that I'm saying it, that sounds silly. It must be Bendy. I don't know. When he had
Bendy, it's Bendii. Take it for everyone.
When he had that condition, he was projecting the emotions he was feeling. Mm-hmm. And Picard was the recipient, the vessel, and he expressed them and how much, like he was saying, like, I love my son Spock so much and blah, blah, blah. But in this episode, everybody was being really horny. Like the one character who I felt was expressing emotions that Talyn was feeling was the bird dude who was trying to blow up the replicator because it wasn't doing exactly what he wanted. Like that I could see was what Talyn was feeling, but everybody else, it just felt like it was random emotions.
I would agree with that. And part of me was thinking during the episode, like, okay, maybe they're going to play off with, you know, there's a thing, there's a term for it, and I don't recall what it is, where someone, and maybe it's a kind of a trope, but apparently it's actually a real thing too, where someone on a plane will say, I feel sick after they ate something. And then other people will say, well, I feel sick too. I feel sick too. And more and more people think they get sick. When actually they are 100% fine, but psychologically they start getting this. This is even an episode of House, I think. I don't remember the term for it. And part of me was thinking, is that what this playoff is going to be? Everyone just sees some people having wild reactions like, oh, it's affecting me too. I can't control myself. I'm doing all these things. But that never actually came to be. That's just where I thought it might be going. And it never did. It just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because once like she got better, everybody got better.
Uh-huh.
Even it's if like, they didn't see other people getting better.
And I mean, humans are complicated creatures. Like, or people are complicated. Vulcans are. You get idea.
Yes.
Like, we can be multiple moods at the same time.
Oh, yes.
Like, being angry and using this crew here as example, being angry and sexually frustrated at the same time, right?
I saw the movie Inside Out. I know how emotions work.
Oh, I did not. But,
I recommend it.
So I was like, I can see some leeway there, but there was just no payoff and no suggestion of it. You had to connect those dots. And usually I'm cool with connecting dots, but this one didn't really give me dots to connect. So whatever. And like, okay, it was fun. Like, okay, we got three middle-aged or older betazoids having a fun time, doing their thing. Okay, we discovered there's a secret service or secret intelligence agency on Betazoid. Okay.
They have their own, you know, Obsidian Order.
I expect every planet to have that. Okay. I mean, it's kind of neat. Like, okay, sure, you got that. That's fun. But it didn't really pay off. There was no payoff here. There's some funny lines toward the end. I am Vulcan AF. And whatever. But I was just, this is not exciting me.
For me, the payoff was the arc that Talyn went on. Because at the beginning of the episode, she saw her time on the ship as a punishment. And she wanted to end the punishment and leave the ship. And by the end of the episode, she chose not to send the message. She chose to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't just that she was experiencing a syndrome. She was also suffering from a lack of self-confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it strange that when she restored her self-confidence, her syndrome went away. But for the purpose of the plot, I understand it. And I liked that. So yeah, she was sent there against her will, but now she has reclaimed it and made it her own. And I like that part of the story.
Yeah, I guess that's good. That's good. I hadn't thought of it that way, but yeah, absolutely.
Next episode.
One second. I just thought, if you want the nerdiest of nerd things that happen, like Memory Alpha can be full of things like the most pedantic things.
Like what?
In the background information under title for this episode. Although presented on Paramount Plus as empathological fallacies, the title card actually read empathological fallacies.
Oh, they changed the vowel?
They changed the vowel. You got a bullet point to make sure we point that out.
So which one is canon?
I don't care. Yeah.
But by the way, brief aside, this is something you and I discussed online, which was the very short treks. I was surprised that the credits are not in the show. You have to look in the YouTube comments. You're the one who pointed that out to me.
Oh.
And most, like, even when we were watching Lower Decks, the episode coming up had some familiar faces, and I watched the credits to find out if that was actually them. It would never occur to me to go anywhere else to look for the credits, but on YouTube, you have to go somewhere else, which is the video description.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned, like, hey, I wish we know who these people are actually the actual actors. And, like, they do.
Well, the videos will eventually be divorced from the context in which they originally appeared.
Yeah, I concur. I'm agreeing with you. I do say.
But like YouTube videos are so easy to download and redistribute, and you're not going to find the description everywhere that the video shows up.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why they wouldn't embed it in there, because actors deserve credit.
Mm-hmm.
Full stop. All right. Last episode?
Parth Ferengi's Heart Place, which is apparently as we were getting ready to record, I pulled up like, what in the world does this mean? Apparently the title derives from the name, I'm reading this bullet point word for word. The title derives from the name of the British comedy horror miniseries Garth Marenghi's Dark Place. Garth Marenghi's Heart Place.
So it's not a Shakespeare thing?
Nope. And, you know, I've already pulled up a link to describing this show and have already forgotten. Horror parody TV series focuses on fictional horror author Garth Marenghi and his publisher, characters who originated in the stage show of Garth Marenghi's Fright Night. Okay.
Oh, by the way, we didn't talk about Boimler playing board games with security.
Oh yeah, I did want to mention that. Back up. I thought that was kind of fun. Shaq's like, the security team is actually all about zen and calm and whatever like that. So when action actually calls for them, they are ready for it. And they can unleash everything they need to. I thought that was fun.
Yes. Okay, moving
and
forward.
They put together a Reed puzzle, Malcolm Reed puzzle.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I love these little references.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Parth Ferengi's Heart Place.
I had so much fun with this one, too, that I also loved the Ferengi. And we got to see Max Gruenschink and Chase Masterson reprise their characters.
Yeah, Rom and Lita are back. So this means that every time a DS9 character shows up on Lower Decks, it has to be a Ferengi and a Bajoran.
Apparently.
Has to be that race and has to be paired in that way.
It was so fun seeing them, especially since I've actually met Chase Masterson a few years ago at a con here in Fargo. She's a sweetheart. She's a lovely. I even bought an album from her.
I've never met her. I would love to, but I'm sure she's lovely. But yeah, I wasn't expecting them to come back. And, you know, it's been literally decades since these actors have played these characters. People's voices change. I wasn't quite sure it was them. And I did have to check the credits to make sure. I would be surprised if it wasn't because those actors are still alive. Uh-huh. But I couldn't tell from listening. Could you?
Yeah, I did. I could tell. But I know I have an affinity for picking up voice actors. I'll be watching with one of my partner's shows. And I'll be like, oh, that's so-and-so who played whatever. And she's like, what? How did you know that? And I'm like, I just know their voice. And it's not perfect. I mess up, but sometimes. But like, so, once in a while, when the kid who played Ruafo in Hook, who later played, I'm drawing on complete blank on my friend's Avatar, My Honor. Oh, God, why am I drawing complete blank? This character, he shows up in here. He shows up in other shows. Like, he's a voice actor now. Like, I recognize him immediately.
Our friend TJ, who appeared on my other podcast, Polygamer, once. He was once playing the Nintendo Switch RPG Octopath Traveler, which it looks like a 16-bit RPG, but it has voice acting.
Zuko. There we go.
And at one point, he's playing the game and he goes and he starts talking to a villager and the villager is responding in voice and TJ is like, holy crap, that's Mark.
Mark Ruffalo.
No, not Mark Ruffalo. A friend of his named Mark. Who is a voice actor.
That's fun.
He's like, oh my God, I saw him last week. He was at my birthday party and now he's in my game.
Oh yeah. Like Liam O'Brien, he's all over the place. He plays... most people, if you play World of Warcraft, you know him as Illidan, but he's also one of the critical role people now. He does voice actors. Yeah. Voices for everything, and it's once you hear him, like, oh, that's him. Yep, that's him. That's great. That's great.
Awesome.
A lot of those people. I recognized Max right away.
At the beginning of this episode, when the Lower Decks Ferengi are... First of all, they were getting rid of their weapons, which I was very surprised by because that seemed very un-Ferengi. And then they said, oh, Grand Nagus Rom. And I was like, oh, I forgot that we live in that universe.
They haven't really referenced it.
And I'm, say what?
They really haven't referenced it. I guess they haven't had need to, have they?
No. And I was also kind of surprised that, I don't know how Ferengi government works. If I recall, the previous Grand Nagus selects the next one. But I would think that there would be an uprising if a Grand Nagus had to get out of the weapons and arms business. But apparently they just fall in line. So I was kind of surprised by that. Pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, who knows how long it actually took. I think this is actually just a few years after like Voyager, if I recall correctly. I don't remember the exact time frame, but it hasn't been 20 years since. So,
right. Also, this episode gave me another reason to believe that rogue ship is not killing everybody, because the Ferengi on that ship... It. Say what?
No one recognized it.
Well, he said, I was told there would be a prophet. Like, he was expecting the ship. He said, right on time, I was told there would be a prophet. And so he had some sort of arrangement with the ship. And for it to just turn around and kill him? Like, you don't need to plan with another ship for the ship to kill you. Because it would have done it anyway. So he was expecting something else. And I think he got it. I think he's still alive. So that's...
He also looked very nervous. Like, I think I should go. But we don't know why.
Yeah.
But once again, the mystery aliens. Like, I'm agreeing with you. My friend Char has a hypothesis on who is on that ship. I was talking to her about that this morning. Do you want to hear it?
I would let you share it with our listeners if I take my headset off. Because I
No. I won't. I won't.
I mean, we've done that before where you speak and I don't listen.
It's totally a hypothesis. It's just fun. It's a character that's been on the show before.
On Lower Decks before?
Uh-huh.
Okay. We shall see.
I won't go into it. I mean, it's not a spoiler because it's just and it wasn't mine. So,
okay. All right. By the way, our friend Char, who has been on the show several times, has a wonderful website where she is selling soap inspired by Star Trek characters.
Yes, she brought up her soap business again, and I used to use Picard soap all the time.
It's called boldbubbles.com, and I have purchased soap from it, both from me and from my mother. I got my mom the Worf soap because she's a huge fan of Data, and that was the same color. So she didn't recognize it at first because she was holding it sideways. So I rotated it 90 degrees, and I was like, Mom, it looks just like Data. She's like, oh my gosh, you're right, it does. And even now that I'm visiting the website, it looks like Char has expanded her selection since I last visited, because now there's Prodigy Zero soap. There is Janeway's Coffee Nebula soap. I don't remember seeing all these options there. Changeling soap with oatmeal, milk, and honey, just like Odo.
Just like the changelings in Picard.
That's right.
Meat product.
Oatmeal, milk, and honey. Yeah.
No, I guess the changeling Picards are made out of meat and bones.
So boldbubbles.com if you want to get some Star Trek inspired soap from
go
friend
support
of the show,
Char. It's a lot of work. She puts a lot of work into it. It's fun. And they are good soaps. I can personally attest. I can actually, this is a product I have used in the past. And this is not paid for, but Char, we should talk.
No, neither of us got any review samples for this.
Yeah, but just use our discount code.
No,
you get 0% off.
Well, just now I went to the website and there was a pop-up for 20% off if you sign up for their email list.
Oh, well, right on. Yeah, anyway.
And there are other brands too, by the way. There's Babylon.
You know, it's funny how fitting this is for this episode, being a Ferengi episode. Make sure you just go to buy the product.
That's right. That's easy.
Yes. I love when I pause the video when landing on the planet on Ferenginar. I wanted to see all the signs that they had. And
what
they had like Sluggo Cola, which is expected. Maximum Umox Rub Dungeon. The movie theater is playing something called Latinum Lost. And there was a place called All You Can, and then just Qbert gibberish. You can imply what that's supposed to be. And of course, there was Uncle Quark's Youth Casino.
Oh, I missed that. I think the biggest laugh I got this episode was when Mariner stopped at the Dominion War Memorial.
Oh my god, and all these lost prophets!
I know, the memorial to lost prophets. Like, oh my gosh. And like the widow was crying, and it's like, oh my gosh.
They really leaned into the Ferengi thing in such a ridiculous, ludicrous way and fun.
And the Ferengi that Mariner was hanging out with was, I think, from season 1, episode 1.
Yeah, they were playing with Boimler. And human.
Yeah, when she said she was going to meet with an old friend, I had no idea who it could be. But once he showed up, I was like, oh, yeah, I do remember that. I don't remember if the orgy was in a holodeck or not, but I remember you.
We also finally get to lean into the Tendi Rutherford romance, or what could be if they could get out of their own heads about it.
I really enjoyed that. I was hoping it would go somewhere that it didn't. I'm not disappointed because it was still fun, but yeah, there's clearly something there because like even Rutherford was saying, why are hearts the symbol of love? It should be like green eyes or something. And then he was like, what? And he's like, oh, sorry, nothing. And he wasn't playing the role of a married man at that point. He was just being unfiltered.
Uh-huh.
It was so cute.
It was adorable. And then they had a date at the Star Trek Experience. I was so excited because I recognized it immediately.
Was it just like at the Hilton?
Yeah. Well, no, oh. I mean, yeah, because much of it was. The opening, when they had the Enterprise and Voyager hanging in the ceiling, immediately I knew the model. That's what they did at the Star Trek The Experience.
And they were playing the music, too.
They were playing the music. They zoomed out, and it was Quark's bar at the Star Trek The Experience, not Starfleet or whatever, Federation Experience, whatever it was. But and they had they didn't have all the, like the Guardian of Forever or the Mugatu or the Mugudu or the Mugutu, like standing around. They didn't have things like that, but they had things like memorabilia all over. And then they actually had an upper level where actors would look down. I remember one made fun of my table. actually, no, that one that was a different incident. Another one was my friend being stupid. He's like, when there's a Klingon up there, and he's like, jump. And the guy looks around and just does a little hop. No, I was giggling so happy that they went to Star Trek The Experience. They did not have the booth where lovers go to. But
I went to Star Trek The Experience at the Las Vegas Hilton back in 98, but I don't think I spent as much time there as in hindsight I would have liked. Like, we didn't go into Quark's. We didn't eat while we were there.
Oh, man.
We just sort of did... We did the museum part at first, and then we did the ride, and I think then we just left.
Oh, man. It's like,
because I was with my brother, who was not a Trekkie.
Yeah, that's right. Where I had gone like three times, and like the third time, we had a ticket where we could just go on the rides as many times as we wanted. It was so much fun. And we were playing with the actors. They were having fun. It was so much fun.
I'm a little envious. I'm a lot envious. Because you can't go back because that thing's gone. No.
I also enjoyed the Warp Core Breach and the James T. Kirk, which were massive drinks that you had to share with six people. They would not let you get it if you were solo.
I love it.
We got so... Anyway, this episode, Boimler gets hooked on TV and commercials?
I like the idea that commercials are such a foreign concept to him. I was a little disappointed that he started binging stuff because I actually wanted to see all those museums he was talking about. I think that would have been fun. It's also, by the way, let's back up. Star Trek has, or rather Starfleet has, a travel guide section.
I'm guessing it's a lot like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah, or Lonely Planet or something. But yeah, and like Starfleet officers get to write them. And they said only just go review four or five things on an entire planet. Wow.
So much fun.
I wouldn't mind that job.
The Museum of Gambling or the Museum of Haggling.
Like, right. And of course, I have to mention it again, the Dominion Memorial.
Yes. Oh, the landlord cops. And then having the show, like, having to sign here when he's dying. On it.
So, brief aside, back in the early years of this millennium, there were four made-for-TV movies based on RoboCop. And my dad screwed up the VCR. And I didn't get to see them. And now I realize that they're on Amazon. And I think they're, like, really pixelated. Like,
oh, really?
Like, standard or even low def. But I don't know any other way to watch them. So I watched the first one and it was, video quality aside, terrible.
Not surprised.
But that's like, I don't watch cop shows like CSI or any law enforcement anything. So RoboCop is as close as I get. So I kind of went from watching RoboCop. Me. Hi.
Oh, you're moving again. There you go. Cool. Okay.
I had a little blink here, too. I don't know what happened. I will make a note to check it in the backlog, but whatever. I'll go back and say... what was I saying? Like, I don't watch law enforcement shows like CSI or anything, so RoboCop is as close as I get. So I went from RoboCop to Landlord Cop, and I was like, it's not all that different, actually.
Nope. It's still it's the same. It's the same. It's great. Let's see.
I want to talk about Grand Nagus Rom because he was, at first I was taken in by his act of being a dullard. And I then, just as Captain Freeman is figuring it out, I started to figure it out. I was like, oh, he's playing them. And he was far more conniving than I remember him being on Deep Space Nine. And I'm not saying that because Quark always saw him as a dumb brother. I'm saying it because Rom always seemed like a very moral person for a Ferengi. And so he seemed to have become, in the years since we last saw him, more Ferengi.
In the first few seasons of DS9, before he joined the Bajoran militia, you could see he's definitely full Ferengi through and through. He does the deals, the self-sealing stem bolts, which we got a reference to here. Changed that conniving Ferengi to conniving engineer. He's always been brilliant. He's just slow in getting there, but he's a brilliant man. And I agree with you, though. Like, something did seem a little different about Rom here. It did feel off to me as well. But not so far out of left field. More in baseball terms, just like shortstop. I don't know. Which apparently, Matt, a little side note, Matt Gruenschink was apparently amazing at baseball in that episode, and he had to play down his abilities so hard. He was trying so hard. He's probably the only one who had actual baseball experience in that episode. Take me out to the Hall of Suite.
What's his actual baseball experience?
I don't remember. They were talking about it on Lower Deck, Delta Flyers. And so apparently he actually is a baseball player, or was, when he was younger. And so yeah, side note. So he actually does love baseball.
Yeah, I enjoyed seeing him on the show. I enjoyed seeing him playing Starfleet and all the things he was asking for. Like, it started off with, oh, we want to play baseball with you. Like, that seemed reasonable because he only ever got to bunt last time. But then he was like, we get to use your ships whether or not we join Starfleet. And Starfleet agreed to that? I mean, come on.
Well, this admiral was an idiot. Yes. With the captain telling him exactly what was going to happen. He's not paying attention.
Nope. Because you don't listen to the woman in the room.
Badmirals.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have a hard time getting used to having a woman on the bridge.
Just like Captain Pike.
Right.
The way they played that, and then like, and then her putting that little thing of like, oh, if you just get Kronos to join the Federation, which is also a fun little nod to the first season of Next Gen.
How so?
At one point, there was a little offhand comment by Wesley about how the Klingons had joined the Federation.
Was
never addressed again.
Oh.
I think this was like years before like they ever thought they were going to... Because they were never going to bring Klingons or Romulans on Next Gen. They wanted to be all new aliens, always. And then by the end of the first season, I think they realized like, oh, we should probably bring Romulans back.
I didn't know that.
We should probably bring Klingons, yeah. That was like... super early Next Gen. I think by end of first season they had already changed that. But now you kind of know what the idea of like everyone's new. We're gonna rehash old episodes, but aliens are gonna be new.
Well, I like how TNG established all these weird species stereotypes that we don't really see anymore except as a joke almost. So like when Boimler at the very end, the Ferengi kicked down his door to bring him back, and they had the electric whips.
Yes.
Like, just like at the Last Outpost.
That was so fun.
Yeah.
And on Enterprise.
Yes, when, again, Neelix.
Neelix. Ethan Phillips plays a played of character. A second time he played a Ferengi.
Yes, because he was also the Grand Proxy.
There was a naked Ferengi woman in Star Trek Experience in the background.
You mean on this show or in Las Vegas?
On Lower Decks.
Okay. I did not see her.
She's in the background. I happened to catch it when I was looking for, when I was looking at the Star Trek The Experience recreated here again. I was talking to Char. There's a naked Ferengi woman in the background. Because if you don't know, viewer, Ferengi women used to be forced, like, had to be mandated to be naked.
Right.
And then Grand Nagus Zek changed that.
By the way, that makes me realize that there was sort of a cross species reference here, where I always forget his name, the bird guy from Lower Decks.
Uh-huh.
Like we would say, you don't have to twist my arm, and he would say like, you don't have to spit in my mouth twice.
Yeah, that was a great line.
Regurgitate. But then I remembered Ferengi women used to pre-chew the food for the men.
Yes,
that they wouldn't have to. And I was like, oh, this is a match made in heaven.
Oh, and him getting the poor like attendee and Rutherford having to use him to break up me.
I didn't know you loved me. No, oh, yeah, that's what the bird guy was saying. But I really liked, we're sort of bouncing around a lot this episode, but like you said, Freeman put in that clause about getting the Klingons in. A Ferengi would not have agreed to that contract without reading it first. So, I mean, maybe Grand Nagus Rom was just so convinced that Starfleet was stupid at that point because they'd agreed to everything else. He was like, there's no way that they're going to suddenly surprise me. So maybe he went ahead with that. My favorite part of the Tendi and Rutherford, well, my favorite two parts. One was when Rutherford said Tendi had nice eyes.
Mm-hmm.
The second was at the very end when they climbed into the Jeffries tube together. Because, like, when they're working, they can be physically intimate. Like, we don't see it, but the legs imply that they were very close to each other.
Uh-huh.
And they were fine with that as long as they're working.
They didn't need a label. They didn't need anything else.
I know we've talked about this. We don't need to ship everybody. Not everybody needs to end up together. And often when they do is when the show jumps the shark, kind of like Joe and Helen on Wings, you know. But
that's a callback.
Am I wrong?
No, I'm just thinking, like, how, like, of the 10 people who listen, it's just me who's gonna get it.
Well, you're the one out of the 10 people listening, you're the only one I'm talking to. So, like, on one hand, I enjoy the tension and seeing it not realized because I know it will never be as good as I hope. But on the other hand, they deserve happiness, and I think they're great for each other.
I think they are happy.
Okay.
They're getting what they want.
That's true. Cool.
This was a lot of fun. This episode was a lot of fun.
It was. I've really enjoyed Lower Decks all season.
Yeah, yeah. And I wish we could go back and talk to our first season versions of ourselves, because we were, like, kind of down to middling on this show, period. And now, like, I want to go back and say, like...
It gets better.
It's just like, you don't understand this yet, is what I think is really it.
Yeah, because we've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah.
But this makes me want to go on Rotten Tomatoes, because I just finished the third season of The Orville. Uh-huh. The first season, I think it had on Rotten Tomatoes a 36% rating.
Oh, really?
And the second and third season both have 100%. And so I'm going to go on Rotten Tomatoes and see what the fans think of Lower Decks over time and how it has evolved. Let's see. Here we go. It should rank the season separately. Here we go. Very similar. Season 1, 68%. Seasons 2, 3, and 4, 100%.
That's amazing. I think it's just we didn't know what we were watching yet.
No, we didn't. And I just want to fact check myself on The Orville. Because I said it got a 36, and that does seem pretty low. If Lower Decks went from 68 to 100, maybe The Orville went from something else to 100. Here we go. I was wrong. It was not 36%. It was 31%. And I was correct about the rest. Seasons 2 and 3 are 100%.
Dang.
Oh. By the way, a brief aside. So you've seen all three seasons of The Orville.
Yep.
Commander Kelly Grayson is played by Adrian Palicki. Yeah. And on the show... you're a fan?
Uh-huh.
I got a selfie with her. Nice. Did I tell you that?
Nope.
So on the show... Her ex-husband is played by Seth MacFarlane, who plays Captain Ed Mercer. And maybe you already know where I'm going with this. But one of the helmsmen, Lieutenant Gordon Malloy, is played by Scott Grimes.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know where I'm going with this?
They were together.
Adrian Palicki and Scott Grimes got married and then divorced during the filming of The Orville.
Uh-huh.
So Seth MacFarlane is playing her ex-husband, and Scott Grimes is her ex-husband.
But yeah.
And the only reason I know that is because during a DragonCon panel, she mentioned, you know, I married and divorced one of my coworkers and we're still friends. And because they were all talking about how they're all friends on the show, I was like, oh, wow, that's hard. Okay.
Maybe not.
I mean, I have a hit or miss record of staying friends with former partners. Uh-huh. I think more hits than misses, but I've also never been married, and that's a whole nother level of commitment. But it made me admire the chemistry on the show all the more.
So, yeah. Watch The Orville. I know the first two episodes are a little rough, but if you haven't watched the rest, you're missing out. There are hits and misses, but you're missing out overall.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've discussed on this show how they made it a comedy because that's what Fox wanted. And once they got the green light, Seth MacFarlane was able to make the Star Trek show he actually wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that I stuck around for it because it was great.
Uh-huh. All right, we have 4 episodes left of Lower Decks this season. We don't have any names for them yet other than episode 37, 38, 39, and 40.
It's true. Maybe those will be the titles,
but I know.
Wasn't it the TV show Friends where every episode was the one about...
Oh, I don't know.
I think every episode title... I remember I saw once an alphabetical list of every episode name and like A, B, C. And it was just like every letter in the alphabet was blank. And then you get to T and every single one is the one about blah, the one about blah. Yeah, that's how they named every episode. So I don't have any predictions. You already mentioned the one about possibly a former character being on that ship. Every episode is touching upon that plot so lightly that we don't really have much to go with. And Lower Decks has never been very serial to begin with.
And the characters in the universe are aware of it. Yes. They mentioned it. So.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's the reason why Tendi was encouraged to go back to her homeworld was to improve relations with the Orions. It's the reason why the Ferengi wanted to join the Federation is because their trading routes were being attacked. And I love the idea of the Ferengi joining the Federation. I never thought I would see that.
But that's, actually, you bring up an interesting thing here, which I hadn't caught.
What?
Maybe in all these attacks, someone is actually unifying the galaxy.
Well, that's a good theory. I like that.
Now, we haven't seen this play out with the Klingons or Romulans, but...
Not yet.
But you can see, for at least 2 or 3, it has played out as bringing people together.
Which is another reason to believe that it's not actually killing anybody.
Yeah.
But who would do such a thing?
So, who would do such a thing? Who would want everyone to work together? I'm actively thinking, I could take it a few times, I'm just kind of, these are my gears thinking out loud. This is how my brain works. If it's not someone we've ever seen, then there's no way. But if there's someone, it could be who we have seen. It doesn't seem like it's a pack-led thing.
No. Maybe it's Captain Archer.
It's been a long road. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I will say I would like to see Mariner stop being self-destructive.
Oh, yes. There's also, why is she doing that? And my hypothesis, I was talking this out, was that... because we know she's not, like, upset with Starfleet. Because last season we saw the end. She's Starfleet to the core. She was missing it. She came back and all that. After,
yep.
I hypothesize that she keeps getting upset at Ransom because he keeps showing he cares. And I was like, well, maybe because as like a Starfleet kid, she always moved around and she was kind of like latchkey. She was an officer's kid, so she never had parents who were always around. And now that she's actually, after a few years of actually having friendships on one ship, that have actually lasted more than a few missions. She's not used to having support and love. She doesn't know how to handle it. Or something along those lines anyway. So she just had so much trouble landing in one place that she's just not used to being off the cuff and pushing people away. And now she doesn't have to. Yeah. So that's my hypothesis.
We'll find out, I hope.
Yeah.
Until we do.
Hit it.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on iTunes and keep your hailing frequencies open by following us on Twitter at TransporterLock or subscribing to our podcast and email newsletter at TransporterLock.com.
Okay.
I'll do all the editing. It's fine. Maybe this will be the worst blooper ever. It's fine.
Just want to sound like this, and you're going to pull up words to
yep.
make it sound like a sentence.
Yeah, AI can do that, you know.